Many times, the husband will go towards the job, and it won't be long before his family is sacrificed on the altar of success. It's like if I were at the altar with Anna and I say, Anna, I'm here to marry you, and I'm gonna marry you, and we're gonna have about 3 kids. But you know, after a few years, I'm gonna actually sacrifice those kids to the God of success. And by the way, I'm gonna sacrifice you too, so I can get success and job. But anyway, put this ring on your finger, would you please?
Aloha and welcome to Words of New Hope with Dr. Wayne Cordero, pastor of New Hope Christian Fellowship. If your family life seems a bit out of control, if there's a big out of order sign on the front door of your home, today's message will be an encouragement to you. Here's Pastor Wayne from a series entitled Confidence in a Shaky World. This message is entitled Lot, A Life Without Order.
So one of the laws that gives us a law of confidence is order in morality. The second is, would you write, order in our homes. Order in our homes. Lot's family was so out of order. As I said, his future sons-in-laws, when they catch the word of the Lord, they laugh at it. They laugh at instruction given by angelic visitation. His wife, after hearing Lot say, don't turn back, the angels say, don't turn back, she says, I'm going to turn back anyway. And the daughters and what they did, I mean, their priorities are so out of whack. And you cannot have confidence in relationships if your family's out of order. You cannot have confidence before God if your family's out of order. Some years ago, there was a rash of crashes with small airplanes. And upon investigating it, the FAA found that most of these crashed airplanes were piloted by pilots that had around 400 flying hours. Not, you know, just enough to think we're kind of cocky now and we don't need to worry about the pre-flight checks, which is a checking all of the major components and parts of an airplane before you take off to make sure the plane is safe to fly and it is safe and everything is in order. Everything is orderly. The oil, this, that, etc. You see, what happened was they found that those that were amateurs in very few hours were still somewhat nervous about flying. So they did not deprioritize the pre-flight check. Before they flew that airplane, they checked every rivet, every aileron, they checked every tire for its tread, oil lines, everything, ran their hands across the skins of the wings to make sure everything was okay. Because they wanted to make sure that that plane was safe to fly in order for them to land again. They wanted to make sure everything was okay. But they found the veterans that had 10,000 hours, 20,000 hours, they had either come close to a crash themselves or they had a friend that had crashed. So they knew the importance of checkpoints and they didn't skimp nor deprioritize nor compromise. Because they knew the importance to make sure that plane was safe in flight and could go the distance. It was those around 400 hours that just were just cocky enough to think, yeah, it's all right, I've done it a few times, it's fine. And then they would go up and it would develop engine problems or some other problem, mechanical problems, they'd crash. Well, the reason I share that about checkpoints that are so important in family that we don't want to skimp is because we were about 400 flying hours in our faith. And to say, yeah, we just keep going here, and we start letting things drop. And we kind of deprioritize the checkpoints. And we say, yeah, we've checked it before, and it was fine then. The Lord says, no, every time you fly that plane, you check all of these checkpoints. And don't deprioritize these things. I want to give you 3 checkpoints that need to stay in priority under family. Very critical. Otherwise, if we forget about checking these constantly and consistently, it'll develop problems, and by the time it crashes, it's too late. So let's take a look at these 3 checkpoints. If you're married, if you're a family kind of person, this applies to you. This is just the first 3 priorities. Here it is. And then there's others. But let me just give you the first 3. The first applies to everybody. First priority is God. Would you write that down? God. My relationship with God is so critical. He must be first in everything. Because if I'm doing good with God, then I'll be fine with my family. But if I compromise with God, I'll start compromising with you. If I'm honest with God, I'll have a better chance of being honest with you. But if I think it's fine to be dishonest with God and hold things back from God and be a little cloak and dagger with God and compromise, guess what? I'll do the very same thing with you. The best thing I can do for this church is love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. And I'll do the same with you. The best thing you can do for your wife, husbands, is love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Because then you'll love your family. Wife, the best thing you can do for your husband is to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Place God as priority number one. Make that an order of life that you refuse to violate. Make it so solid that it's dependable. That years later, your kids will say, you know, my parents, every Sunday, we made it a tradition. We were together to be honest before God. We didn't play games. We really wanted to be honest in every way before the Lord to make sure our hearts were right in every area of our life. Not just one, not just two. And then take that as a platform, every area of our life. Exodus 20 says this. This is the first of the Ten Commandments. God is saying, I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not have any other gods before me. God is saying he gets to be what in everything? First. Because if I can love God, then I'll love you. But if I'm dishonest with God, guess what? I'll be dishonest with everybody else. Start with God. Put him first. It'll affect everything else. The second priority, which is right under that, is God first. Second, if you're in a family, spouse. Spouse. Would you write that down? Not friends. What? Spouse. Not work. What? Not dog. What? Football season. Not football, but... That's right. It's so easy to demote one another during different seasons. Otherwise, we'll be like the man that was such an addict to football. He was there watching football. He had a couple of seats, season seats, but he had one open. This newcomer comes down and says, excuse me, sir, I see a seat next to you. It's open. Can I sit there? He said, oh, yeah. And the football game was going, so he was just intent on the football game. And the newcomer sat down and said, wow, this is such a good seat. Shouldn't one of your family like be sitting? Oh, he said, 25 years, the season tickets, I bought these two seats. And for 25 years, my wife sat in there. Oh, was your wife here? Oh, no, she passed away last week. Oh, he said, I'm so sorry. That's all right, it's all right. Well, what about your kids? Shouldn't they sit here because it's such a good seat? Ah, no, they're not coming today. And he's intent on the game. Well, what about your cousin or a nephew? Oh, no, they're not coming today. What about a brother or your sister to sit here? No, none of them are coming today. How come? He said, because they're all at my wife's funeral. Bad. Bad. The second priority, God, then what? Spouse. That's right. Let's read why I think so. Let's read it. Ready? Go. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Can you see how it speaks about our relationship with our wife and husband? It's just akin, so closely related to the Lord. God is saying first priority is the Lord. Second is your spouse. Third, would you write family? Children, if you're parents, if you're children, family. Family. Now, God is really intent on this. Your family is more important than your career. What's the use if you end up with a great job, but you had to sacrifice your family to get there? It doesn't work. How often we sacrifice our family for success. We trade them, as it were, for success. We can't do that. Be real careful, because especially if you're when you're a young husband or a young wife, here's what happens. You become a husband or wife, then you have one or two children, the bills escalate a little bit. At the same time, there's a converging of your vocation or career. Now you're trying to make a name for yourself in the marketplace, and you're trying to earn a little bit more money to pay for those bills and to provide and get a nicer house or car or whatever. And so the job is pulling you one way to spend more time there, yet your family is needing more time. And there is not necessarily a convergence. There is actually a collision of two kinds of lifestyles where the job is pulling you and also the family is pulling you. So it collides, and you have to make a choice which way you're going to go. Many times, the husband will go towards the job, and it won't be long before his family is sacrificed on the altar of success. So they end up with a job, but without a family. They had to give their family in order to get this. Now, nobody would ever do that intentionally, but that happens 100,000 times a year in America. If they knew, they wouldn't have gotten into that. I mean, it's like if I were at the altar with Anna and I say, Anna, I'm here to marry you, and I'm going to marry you, and we're going to have about 3 kids. But, you know, after a few years, I'm going to actually sacrifice those kids to the God of success. And by the way, I'm going to sacrifice you too so I can get success and job. But anyway, put this ring on your finger, would you please? Do you think that would excite her? No. We would never say that, but how many do exactly that? Exactly that. So God is saying, in order to not get duped into that philosophy, you've got to do that check to make sure it's God and spouse and family before anything else, to keep that. And once those are in order, you'll have great confidence in your job, great confidence in relationships. You put those and violate that order, it'll steal, erode confidence. If you're a child, your second priority is God because you don't have a spouse yet. Like my daughter or son, they'll be 50 or so before I allow that. And so it's God and then family. In fact, Ephesians 6:1 says this, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. It continues and it says, now honor your father and mother, for this is the first commandment with a promise attached to it. What's the promise? Well, if you honor your father and mother, it will go well with you and you will live long upon the earth. Those are the promises. It'll go well with you and you'll live long upon the earth. I remind my son Aaron of that all the time. I say, Aaron, you listen to me, you'll live longer. A father that helps him with the scripture. You should hear this next one. It's even more intense about the importance and priority of family if you're a child. Proverbs 30 and verse 17. This is kind of gross. Here's a PG-13 part. It says this, the eye that mocks his father or scorns his mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out and the young eagles will eat it. Isn't that gross? The eye that mocks his father and mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out and the young eagles will eat it. I mean, that's pretty serious stuff. That's why all three of my children only have one eye. They're blind in one eye. Took them a little while, but they got that principle. They learn a little slow, but they learn only after one maca was hemmed, and then they learn. So the priority in family or the order in family is what? God, spouse, family. And then the third order in this law of confidence is order in faith. Order in faith. Order in our faith. You see, Lot really didn't even want to serve God. I mean, he had to be convinced to serve God, persuaded to serve God, sweet-talked to serve God, cajoled in order to serve God, urged in order to serve God. I thought, oh, Lot, get real. His faith was so out of order. He really didn't even want to serve God. Let's read Genesis 19. You'll see what I mean. Ready? Go. And when the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, but Lot hesitated. So the men seized his hand, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him. He didn't even want to follow God. They urged him. Finally, they had to just grab him. Because if it weren't for the compassion of God, Lot would have been fried with the rest of them when the fire and brimstone fell. He would have been a crispy critter. But God's compassion pulled him, even having to urge him. And I thought, Lord, am I someone like that? Do I have to be urged to serve God, to obey God? Come on, Wayne, obey me. Come on, Wayne. Come on, please. Just try it one time. Come on, open your mouth, say, ah. Oh, no, God. I don't want a faith that's so fragile that it just breaks all the time and goes out of order. God, give me an order in my faith. Help me to do that. Otherwise, we'll be like the mother that wakes up her son and says, son, let's go to church. Oh, no, please, come on. No, I don't want to go to church. Why don't you want to go to church? Well, first of all, he said, people don't love me at that church. Secondly, they don't listen at that church. And the mother said, oh, yes, they do. They love you at that church. Secondly, they do listen. And thirdly, you're the pastor. Get up. Even when Lot did obey God, he still tries to cut corners and compromise and shave the edges. When God speaks to him, he says, well, could I do just half? I thought, oh, Lot, come on. Let's read this. Ready? Go. One angel said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains, lest you be swept away. But Lot said to them, oh, no. I cannot escape to the mountains, lest disaster overtake me and I die. No, behold, this town is near enough to flee to, and it is small. I thought, oh my goodness. God says, Lot, go to the mountains. Oh yeah, but can I just go to this smaller town here? It's closer and it's nicer. You see, if God speaks to us and we start taking shortcuts, then confidence isn't built. Let me tell you, it's eroded. If you've climbed up Diamond Head, you'll see a sign near one of the pathways, and it says this, a great sign. It says this, stay on the path. Take no shortcuts. It causes erosion. Isn't that a great sign? Stay on the path. Don't take shortcuts. It causes erosion. And I thought that sign should be in every single one of our homes, over every one of our church doors. Stay on the path. Don't take shortcuts. It erodes. It erodes your faith. It erodes your destiny. It erodes your legacy. Well, some of you are here and you say, Wayne, what if my life is a little out of order? Well, let me finish with this story. When I was in high school, I played basketball for the high school team. So that should tell you how small our high school was. It was country high school. I spent a year and a half there after a seminary experience, and I went to a public school and then dropped out of that. But for a year and a half, I was at this public high school, and on one day, a basketball season, we were playing around, and I wanted to dunk the basketball. I wanted to feel, you know, how it felt like to dunk the basketball. So the baskets, of course, are 10 feet. But the side baskets were near the bleachers. So when you pull the bleachers out, it was like 6 feet away from the bleachers was the basket. So some of us were getting the basketball and we'd run on the bleachers sideways towards the basket and then we'd dunk it and we'd, you know, drop down. Well, I wanted to do that. So I took a basketball and plus there were some girls watching, so I wanted to look cool. And so I ran out there and I did a Michael Jordan, you know, pose just for the pictures. And then I came whack and I dunked the ball, but I grabbed the rim and I swung up. And when I came down, I fractured my leg, broke my leg. It was a tibia or fibula or fibula or tibia. I can't, one of the girls' names broke. And now this was a little school. I'm 30 miles away from home. This is 3:30 in the afternoon. The bus picks us up at 5:30, so I'm waiting for 2 hours. They don't know if it's broken or not. It was indeed broken, but they just said, well, just put some ice on it. And so the bus finally comes. In pain, I'm transported back home. Now, I get home around 7 o'clock at night. The clinic is closed because it's way out 30 miles away from the school, another X amount of miles away from the nearest hospital. And they didn't, you know if it was really broken or not. So they thought, just put ice on it. And so the clinic, though, that we go to is in a next town called Shady Cove. Nice quaint town, Shady Cove. I lived in a town called Trail, Oregon. Population 75. No kidding. 75. It's on the sign. In fact, the sign on one side that says, welcome to Trail. The other side said, goodbye. That's a town. And it was so small, when my dad plugged in his electric shaver in the morning, all the street lights dim. But it's just a little teeny place. So I'm Friday all night in pain. Saturday, Sunday, by Monday around noon or 1 o'clock, I get an appointment to go into the clinic. I go into the clinic and they x-ray it and they find out it is indeed fractured a little bit. But the doctor came out and said, I got one little problem. He said, yeah, it is fractured, it's broken. But he said, because it's been so long, it's already starting to calcify. And so he said, so we'll have to, because it's out of alignment, we have to bring it into alignment. So basically he had to re-break my leg. So I said to him, will this hurt? I don't know, And he said to me, it'll cause a bit of discomfort and you'll feel a little pinch. He lied. He sat me on this thing and he started talking. Oh yeah, and what position do you play in basketball? Yeah, you like basketball. All of a sudden, yeah. Ah! That was horrible. But finally then he x-rayed it again and then he gave me the good news. He says it's perfectly aligned and it's put back in order. And then he said something. He said, now it's complete healing can take place and happen. Because you see, when it's off a little bit, if it heals like that, it won't really fully heal. You'll always have trouble with it and it'll always be weak. But once it's in order, then healing, that's it's designed to receive, can be received, and it'll in fact be stronger than it was before because it'll now be reinforced. But it had to be brought into what? Order, alignment. Now, Psalm says, to him who orders his ways aright, to him I will show the resources, the salvation, the wholeness of God. Some of you are here at New Hope and you say, Wayne, my life is not in order. I violated those orders there, order of morality, order in my home, order in my faith. The priorities are out. But you see, here's how God does it. If my life is ordered incorrectly and he shows the order of God and I look at the contrast, I say, well, I'm so far off, so I guess I'm no good. No, God doesn't show his order to you in order to condemn you. It's in order to direct you. See, before God's order was there, you did the best you can because you're just following what the current of the world was. But when God puts his order there and you see the contrast, it's now visible. It's not there to condemn you. It's there to direct you. And to him who is ordering his way, who orders his way aright, to him I will show the salvation of God. And the healing starts to flow. Because sometimes if our life is out of order and we say, God, heal us, he can't. You see, often we're not waiting on God. He's waiting on us. So that when you order your way aright, to him I will show the salvation of God. And then, actually, your life will now become stronger because he will have reinforced you. But he can't do that unless it's brought into order. The laws of confidence, then he can flow his resources. And so with you, you might say, well, Wayne, my life is out of order in here. That's fine. What God's doing is he's showing you his order. Now he's saying, order your way right. Don't keep it that way now. Order your way right. Because when it comes to be in order, then you'll find a great reinforcement and a great confidence and a great faith. And what you thought was broken, when you order it to God, you will find that your future will be stronger than ever because he will have heard your prayer, seen your willingness to order with him, and he will reinforce your destiny with his grace. Isn't that a great, great promise? That's good news, don't you think?
You've just heard part two of a message entitled Lot, A Life Without Order. Thank you for listening to Words of New Hope. Until the same time next time, for Pastor Wayne Cordero, this is Del Gibbs wishing you a great day in the Lord, and aloha.
What if there were a place where you could discover, develop, and fulfill your dreams? A place where passion and creativity thrive in a community pursuing something greater than themselves. That place is New Hope Christian College.
New Hope Christian College is a place where everyone knows everyone. Your teachers really do care about you, they want you to succeed, and they're willing to partner with you to do whatever it takes to make that happen.
The education that I've received at New Hope has really equipped me to graduate market ready.
No matter where you come from, New Hope Christian College is a place where you can come to find community.
There's a place for you at New Hope Christian College. For more information, go online to newhope.edu or call 1-800-322-2638. New Hope Christian College, a place where dreams are released.